Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, UFOs, aliens, Area 51, conspiracies, unsolved crimes, the supernatural. Are they real or are they figments? With your hosts, Colleen and Eddie Medina.
Good evening and welcome to Figments, the podcast where we talk about the unknown and the unexplained and the scary and the macabre and the dark and the anything else.
And the sweet and the sour while you're at it. You're just like naming off every kind of combination
and
in the world.
And the salt and pepper and the black and white. And okay. I am your host for this evening, Colleen Medina. And with me is my handsome hubby, Eddie Medina.
Hello, Figment listeners.
Really?
Sorry, I'm excited.
I was wondering, did you
choke on something? We're making it spectacular because this is October, you know, we got to add to the creepiness of the month.
Yes, all October we are going to be talking about spooky, scary, weird, or extra weird things. So, Eddie, tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Well, tonight, Figment listeners, you will be treated to urban legends. That's the best Bill Lugosi you're going to get out of me. Sorry.
Yeah, for those of you that didn't understand what he said, we're going to be talking about urban legends.
We're going to be talking about urban legends. They understood the first time. Okay. You don't have to redo it.
Okay. But before we get into that, we did just want to say how much fun we had at the Granberry Paranormal Expo Saturday.
The weather was
gorgeous. It was a nice ride there and back.
Yeah.
It was, like we said, it had been moved outside. That was one of probably the best things that they could have done. Because who wants to be inside? I mean, unless it's raining or something.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. We got to meet some neat people, and Eddie even had somebody out there that knew about one of his podcasts and got excited when he realized it was him. It was really cool.
Yeah, that was fun. You're Rancore. I know Rancore. Yeah, that made my day to actually be recognized by somebody out there.
So if you didn't get a chance to go to it this year, you really, really benefit from going to it. It was really cool. Just a fun time.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much to see. Not in just the town square, but they had, you know, the jail was doing its tours and all the restaurants were having fun stuff and they had the zombie pub crawl. It was just...
Yeah, and not to mention, Granberry is such a cool town. The buildings are old and, you know, some of the buildings...
They call that historic.
Yeah,
historic. That's why it's called historic downtown Granberry.
That's a good point. So, old people, can we call them historic or would we get in trouble? I don't know.
As long as you're not calling them decrepit, I guess.
Well,
decrepit. A decrepit? What?
It's not decrepit.
Anyway, yeah, it was great. So,
yeah.
Make plans for next year. You can always keep up with them on Facebook or go to GranberryParanormalExpo.com. Great, great time. Brandy, her, and all of her crew just did an amazing job at putting together a great family event.
So we're going to go ahead and just get right on into it. Start on urban legends. You know, I've always been fascinated with urban legends. They've always been so interesting.
Yeah.
Because even if they're not real, because, you know, some urban legends turn out to be true. And that's even creepier. But even the ones that don't turn out to be true, it's just fun to listen to the stories. And a lot of times they're told different ways. There's different versions of them. And to hear about, well, this story took place in New York, or this story took place in Texas, or whatever.
It's like that old game you used to play in elementary where you'd sit in a circle and one kid would whisper to the kid to the left of them, and then they would whisper
telephone.
And they would keep whispering. Now it would be cell phone. And they would whisper, and by the time it got back to the original person, the story would change. That's the way it is with a lot of these urban legends. It starts out one way, and depending on the geographical region or who's telling what to who, you know, as it's passed down from generation to generation, it changes. But at its core, if you look at a lot of these urban legends, at their core, they're generally the same basic story.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. Like you were saying earlier, Colleen, sometimes urban legends are fun to listen to. You tell them around the campfire or whatever, or sleepovers and all. But then other times they try not to be real, and that's what's the freaky part. And that's what mm-hmm. we're going to be doing tonight is some of the things we're going to be telling tonight are going to be real. Others, you will have to decide, are they a figment
of your imagination?
Oh, gosh. And we also have another special guest helping us out tonight. You want to tell our official figment mascot is in the studio tonight. Colleen, what do you tell them about our mascot?
Yes, she is in. Yes, I said she. She is in the studio, and her name. Are you listening? Are you ready?
Yes.
Her name is Chelsea Chupacabra.
Chelsea Chupacabra. Thank you for joining us, Chelsea. Yes, okay, I forgot. she can't speak. She just kind of is like miming stuff at us right now. So you can't, since this is a podcast and not a broadcast, you can't, you know, actually see that. So anyway, she waved and gave a big smile to everyone. And let me tell you, when a chupacabra smiles, it's a little scary.
Well, and what's funny is our dog, who is a hairless Doberman, and he's a fawn Doberman at that.
Yeah.
So does he look like a Doberman at all? No, not really. He's laying on top of me, and
he looks like Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar Binks, and sometimes we call him Chupacabra. So it's kind of funny that he's right here, and Chelsea's here too. I mean, come on.
But Chelsea's she serves a purpose tonight. Why don't you tell them about that?
She does serve a purpose. She is going to be doing our drum roll.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about the urban legends and then have a little drum roll Z. See what I did there? Drum roll Z.
Okay,
never mind. To find out if the urban legend is just a legend or if it's true, or maybe it might just be partly true. Or mostly true. Or maybe just a tad bit.
Oh my gosh, we're going to be asking, is it real or a figment? Okay. That's it. A real or a figment. Or figment. That's only two choices. Two choices. Two. Two.
What were the two choices?
Oh, my gosh. Chelsea, bite her.
Okay. And I do have to say this on air. Right when you said that, Velcro, our Doberman, who looks like a chupacabra, opened his mouth and was trying to nibble on me. Okay.
Good.
I'm going to go ahead and start with...
And in addition to Chelsea, the chupacabra, and Velcro, the Doberman chupacabra, we also have Ginger, our chocolate lap / Sasquatch over here. So she's a lab. She's a lab squatch. I just made up that phrase.
Oh, I like it. She is a lab squatch. She's huge. Ginger is huge, by the way. She takes up half the bed. Literally.
We're talking about you. She's looking at us with a little sad eyes.
Aww.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you just interrupted me, so I'll have to start over. I won't start all the way over from the very beginning of the...
Welcome to Figments.
But I will just start over here.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and start with my most favorite urban legend, and it is the story of the tainted Halloween candy.
Ooh! Oh my gosh. Kind of creeped me out there.
Sorry, I had to get that out.
She gets excited when she thinks about Halloween candy.
I love Halloween.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is my most favorite urban legend.
Okay.
So I remember trick-or-treating when I was young, and maybe like last year too, but getting the candy, my mom would, whenever we would get back in the house, my mom would always have to look at our candy first. Always. There was never a year, there was never a piece of candy that she did not check. And so I always thought, okay, my mom is just, she's just trying to be safe. She's just trying to look out for us and keep us out of danger. And then I started wondering, okay, what happened to all the good candy that I know that I got from these houses?
Yeah.
So then I was realizing, hey, my mom isn't trying to look out for us. She's just trying to get the good candy before we get it. And then she was pretending that she was looking out for us.
See, kids, see this pile of candy over here? This is all tainted.
Tainted in quotes with your fingers. And so she was looking for just, you know, something that maybe had been opened and, I guess, resealed. She was looking for holes, anything that looked abnormal. And some of it, I think I remember her throwing it away, but not a whole lot. And then it wasn't until the next day.
So she was one of those, let's just say, over-paranoid parents.
Hey.
My mom didn't care. She was like, you're on your own.
Yeah, and look at you now. I, however, turned out fine.
Yeah.
I, however, turned out fine.
Anyway.
So it wasn't until like the next day that I was able to eat the candy. And I always thought, okay, or maybe later on I realized that, okay, is this coming from something? Did something happen? Because she's checking my candy every single year. And I guess I was too young for her and I to really talk about it, for her to tell me, because I was too young. But what she was looking for was, you know, like a needle in there, or a razor blade, or even to where it looked like the package had been opened and maybe something like poison was put in there. I mean, if you think about it, you're getting Halloween candy from strangers. You know, yeah, these are people in your neighborhood, but how well do you know these people? And some people in our neighborhood, we've never met. Some people we've never even seen, you know? So it can get a little scary when you think about that you're getting candy from pretty much strangers. So anyway, I started wondering, what did something happen? And I know my mom wasn't the only one. I know all of my friends, their parents were checking their candy, and they would have commercials on, like, during Halloween Day. They would have a commercial reminding, you know, parents to check the candy and to be safe out there. And you're just starting to think, oh, my gosh, what is happening?
Well, in addition to that, there was 24-hour clinics that would do free x-rays of your Halloween candy. I mean, how expensive was that? To do an X-ray on a bag of candy,
but
and they never found anything from what I remember. No, but maybe you have something else to report.
Well, yeah, that we know of, they never found anything. But that's the thing. Yeah, I'm sure it was expensive, but they wanted to go that extra mile to keep everyone safe. And so you're starting to think, okay, there's got to be some truth behind this, because everybody's checking the candy and everybody's thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
And so the more research I did, oh, and let me just say, there's been all sorts of movies out there, urban legend movies or documentaries.
Tony Todd.
Okay.
Tony Todd was a candy man.
Oh, goodness.
Willy Wonka was a candy man, too. Anyway.
Anyway, all sorts of movies out there about urban legends, and, you know, pretty much the same ones that we've all heard here and there, different versions of the story, of the same stories and stuff.
Yeah.
So as I'm doing all this research, okay, so this is where we need Chelsea the Chupacabra to come in. Chelsea, are you coming?
She's coming.
Okay. Here, I can hear her little feet walking. All right, so.
And Chelsea, drum roll, please.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So this urban legend is mostly true.
It's either true or a figment. Real or a figment.
Okay. So it's, let me just say this. There has never been a case.
It's like you're just like on Princess Bride's Mostly Dead. It's like, it's either dead or you're not. It's like,
My word is what brings us together today. Okay.
Yeah.
There has never been a case where Halloween candy has been tainted, reported. Nothing has ever been found in Halloween candy. There have been instances where people have gotten mad, or they're just in a bad mood or whatever, and they've given out stuff that they shouldn't be giving out to the kids.
Like what?
Like SOS pads, dog biscuits. Rocks.
That's such an odd thing, SOS pads.
I know.
Like, did they want them to go clean the sink or something? I know.
And one lady even was reported to be giving out, it was rat poison buttons or ant poison buttons, something like that. It clearly said poison on the outside.
Tablets or something?
Yeah. So there, no one was hurt or killed. I do believe that charges were brought against her for that. But anyway, I don't really remember all the
so
details.
Then in a way it's true, it's not a legend, because there are reports that something, well, I mean, it does, just because a kid didn't die doesn't mean the crime wasn't, you know, she still distributed harmful materials.
Okay, but the legend is something planted inside the candy.
Oh, like a razor blade or nails or
right.
something.
Right, this is my story, you stick to your own story.
Okay.
Alright, the way that it's partly true is there was an incident Halloween night, I believe it was 1974. A little boy and his sister, and then two neighborhood friends and their two dads went trick-or-treating. It was the O'Brien family, and I believe the Bates family. No. And
like Norman?
They get home, and the little boy, his name, he was 8-year-old little boy, his name was Timothy, he wanted a piece of candy before he went to bed. So he picked the pixie stick that they had gotten from some house. And his dad rolled it up because he couldn't get it open. So his dad rolled it up and, I guess, poured the stuff down his throat, you know. And so Timothy had said that it tasted bitter. So his dad gave him some Kool-Aid to, you know, wash it down with. And he thought everything was fine. Then he starts throwing up. Like, he started complaining of his stomach hurting. He started throwing up, convulsing, and just kind of went limp. And he was dead on arrival at the hospital. So this 8-year-old boy dies from eating tainted pixie stick.
Wow.
And his autopsy showed that he had died of cyanide poisoning. And apparently, there was enough cyanide in his pixie stick to kill 2 to 3 adults.
Good night.
Yeah. The police are investigating, and, I mean, the parents are just... The mom is just freaking out. The dad is trying to take the police back to where they trick-or-treated to figure out who gave them these tainted pixie sticks.
Yeah, backtracking.
Right. And so this is where the story gets a little weird. The police started wondering what was going on because the dad kind of kept changing his story. And he couldn't remember where he got these pixie sticks. And he had only gotten 5. And there were 4 kids with him. And he got 5. And then it was raining that night, so they only trick-or-treated on 2 streets. And he couldn't remember the street that they got the pixie sticks at. And the crazy thing is that whenever they were trick-or-treating, they get to this house, and it didn't have a light on saying that they were participating. And when they rang the doorbell anyway, no one answered the door. And so the kids and the other dad went on to the next house because the kids were getting impatient. They didn't want to wait anymore. The dad, Timothy's dad, his name is Ronald Clark O'Brien. He stayed behind. Okay, yeah. Why would you stay behind? Then he catches up and he said, look at these pixie sticks I got.
Oh,
yeah,
that's convenient.
And they were like the giant pixie sticks. Okay. Yeah. While he was taking the police around, he was changing his story, and he was saying, oh, well, I think it might have been this house, and I think it might have been this house. So finally, he says, okay, yeah, we got the pixie sticks at this house. And it happened to be the house where they stopped at, and no one answered. And he said that when everybody else walked off and he stayed behind, without turning on the light or anything, the person inside the house opens the door and sticks their arm out. They only cracked the door open enough to get their arm out and gave him the pixie sticks. I'm sorry, but would you be taking pixie sticks from an arm? That's like Lurch or something from the Addams Family. What do you think?
I think it's more like Thing from the Addams Family, but okay.
Okay, whatever.
If it's just an arm, and, you know, just a hand. You know.
Okay. Oh, but get this. He had to have seen the arm because he described it as being hairy. Uh-huh. Being hairy. So then they realized that, okay, well, maybe the dad had something to do with it. And they're going to try to confiscate all the other pixie sticks. So he had given the 5th one to a kid that they had seen that night, I think, that came over to the house or something. I think they were all going to church together. Thank goodness none of the other kids had any pixie sticks. One of the kids actually... You can picture a kid doing this. Fell asleep with a pixie stick clutched in their hand. They couldn't get it open.
Yeah.
And so they were so tired from that night that they fell asleep with it in their hand. Kind of a cute story when, you know, you don't think about anything else happening.
Yeah.
So when the police got the rest of the pixie sticks and examined them, they realized that they had all been opened. They had all been stapled closed. Stapled shut. If your child's pixie stick had been stapled, would you have opened it and poured it down his throat? I don't think so. What about you, Eddie?
Number one, I wouldn't have a kid, but yeah, that would seem odd. So I have a question, and maybe you said this and I didn't catch it. Were all 5 sticks poisoned?
Or yeah.
Okay, so he wasn't just targeting his own son, he was targeting all 5 kids.
Right. All 5 were poisoned.
Good night.
And that's whenever the police And like I said, thank goodness that none of the other kids had touched
there. Okay, that's what I thought you were saying.
They got, and so, and then they also realized that 2 inches of the top had been poured out, and 2 inches had been poured in of cyanide. So
they were going to get the cyanide first.
Yeah. The little boy had enough to kill 2 to 3 adults.
Yeah.
The other kids had enough to kill 3 to 4 adults.
Gosh.
Could you imagine?
Okay, so what happened to the father?
So the father, I believe, was arrested a few days later. He always proclaimed his innocence, always said that he had nothing to do with it. And
it was just this mystery arm that was responsible.
Right. Well, he said that the person who... Okay, getting back to that arm, that house, the person that lived there had an airtight alibi. They were an air traffic controller at work that night. And they... I'm not sure if it was a man or a woman. They did not get back, probably a man, probably, I mean, did not get back home until after 11. And so he
wasn't even smart enough to do the research. The person he was going to blame it on.
Right.
He didn't even research it to the point that he would have known that.
Well, he blamed it on that house because he knew good and well that they didn't get those pixie sticks at any of the houses that answered their door.
Yeah.
That's where he stayed behind, and he had them, I guess, in his pocket under his coat or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they arrested him and charged him with that. His wife even said that he was real believable whenever he would talk about it, and he would try to defend himself, but she knew that he was lying. And I thought, well, that's interesting, his own wife. And apparently he had instances all through their marriage where she thought that he was lying.
Yeah.
And I think he only admitted to one time that he had lied to her.
Mm.
A few days before they went trick-or-treating, he was inquiring about buying cyanide and asking people what the lethal dose would be to kill a human.
Yeah, that doesn't scream guilty right there.
He also took out life insurance policies on both children. His wife had no idea that he took out those policies on them.
Yeah. So he's found guilty. What kind of sentence did they hit him with?
It only took them a short while to find that he was guilty, and then they sentenced him to death.
Oh.
And either the judge or the prosecutor, somebody wanted him to fry, wanted to give him the electric chair.
Yeah.
And they ended up, I thought this was ironic, they ended up giving him
lethal injection.
Yes. So that's what he killed his son with.
They should have given him a pixie stick.
But get this. Somebody, I guess one of his lawyers, didn't want him to die that way because they thought it was inhumane. And when the prosecutors and the police talk about this, they get so mad. And I've even seen, after years later, I've even seen the men start tearing up and crying. Not crying, but, you know, tearing up. And just, you can tell they're upset.
Yeah.
Because it's this little boy, you know, his life is cut too short. And some of them have little boys the same age. And so they're thinking, oh, my gosh, this could happen to my son.
Oh, yeah.
And his lawyer, when one of either the prosecutor or one of the policemen was remembering during the trial, his lawyer saying, you know, my client has been charged with killing Halloween. Not killing his son, but killing Halloween. Are you kidding me? So that's more important than killing his own son. In an interview with Geraldo Rivera, I forgot who it was, but anyway, on one of these documentaries I saw, he had said one of the last things I remember him saying was that the real victim in this case was him, because he's being wrongly accused for something he didn't do. So, there you have it.
That's something else. Okay, so did we figure out that's considered real or a figment? I'd say it's real. It's real.
I really think that it's based on a story.
But exactly, the legend stems from the true story, so it's real.
Okay,
isn't it? But anyway, okay, let's do mine for my first one. Okay, so mine is the Green Man of Pittsburgh.
Oh, I have no idea what this is going to be about.
Okay. A.K.A. Charlie No Face.
Oh, yeah, I've heard it. No, I haven't.
Okay. So this is one that I've only discovered recently, and I was so intrigued by the story. Okay, so this is the legend. It's the Green Man is said to be green glowing man that has been seen walking along the sides of the highway at night. So a man just glows green at night. There's several different stories that have been told about him, and I'll go through a few of them. That they say it's he was once a man who worked for the electric company and was electrocuted while he was working on something. Because he was electrocuted, he was disfigured, and now he seeks to bring pain to others because he himself is having to live in pain and everything else.
So, misery loves company.
Misery loves company. And that he will lash out in anger at anyone after years and years of just being tormented because of his disfigurement. Another legend is that they call it the Green Man's Tunnel. And they say it's a tunnel that when you drive through it, or for that matter, if you're parked in the tunnel, you know, like a make-out point type thing, that your car will start to have electrical problems.
Oh.
And, like, the people will have electrical problems, they'll finally get their car started and drive away. And then they'll notice later, upon inspection, that on the outside of their car will be fingerprints or handprints.
Ooh.
That the Green Man, yeah, that the Green Man has left behind. So, another legend is that he was just a man who was struck multiple times by lightning. They say lightning only strikes. What was the saying? Lightning only strikes once.
Lightning doesn't strike in the same spot. I don't know.
Yeah, something like whatever it is. But they say
lightning never strikes the same spot.
Twice. More than
one. Yeah, twice.
So he was struck apparently multiple times by lightning, and that caused him to become the glowing man. Another thing is, parents use the glowing man. The Green Man, as a boogeyman type character, and they would tell their children that if they were acting up, that they would be taken away by the Green Man. So he's kind of played the role of a specter that walks along the side of the highway at night. He's been a tormentor of others, and he's been the boogeyman to bad children. So he's been different things. Now,
he's just a grump all around.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there is a story I'm going to tell that was really intriguing. It's about a family. So they pull into the gas station late one night, and they're on a road trip. So the dad goes into the gas station to get snacks and to pay for his gas and what all. Well, the kid's got to go to the restroom. The little boy has got to go to the restroom. He's trying to ask his mom if she can take him or if he can go, but she's, you know, being a road trip, she's just asleep, knocked out, and she's like, don't bother me, whatever. So the kid, you know, can't wait for the father to get back because he's taking forever. So he gets out. He goes over to the restrooms. He goes in. He tries to turn on the light, but the lights will not work. So the only light that is in the restroom is coming from the windows that are sitting up high, the moonlight that's coming through the windows up high. And so he's walking along, and he goes to the urinal. And as he's using the urinal, and keep in mind, this is like a kid that they said was 8, and he's using the urinal, and then suddenly he hears the creaking of the stall door opening.
Uh-huh.
He looks over his shoulder, mind you, in the dark, and there in the stall, just barely cracked open, he sees the Green Man staring at him with just one eye peeking out from behind the stall door. So the kid starts to run out of the restroom, and as he's running, he doesn't bother to look back. He just hears the Green Man coming after him. He busts open the door thinking he's safe, but you know, you have to realize, you know, this, looking at the police photos, the restroom faces the side. It was on the side of the gas station, so it faces the woods, not the front where the gas pumps are at. So even though he's out, he still has to make it around the building back to the front. So as he's running, he's about to get into the light of the, you know, the overhang. The Green Man grabs a hold of him. They both fall. The Green Man slashes at his Achilles tendon.
Oh.
So as the kid is trying to crawl away, the Green Man stands up and starts to come after him. He is able to just barely escape to tell the tale of the Green Man.
Oh, that's pretty creepy.
So, we have to ask ourselves, is it real or is it a figment? So, Chelsea.
Of your imagination.
Chelsea, why don't you give us a drum roll, please? It's real.
Uh-uh. Are you kidding? Wow.
It's real to a point. Now, there, you know, like with any...
So it's mostly true.
With any urban legend, it stems from an actual real story. And as legend grows and grows, it takes on different stories. That's why in some stories, he's a tormentor. Other stories, he's the boogeyman. Other stories, he's a specter that walks alongside the highway. All those are different aspects of the true story. And that's the whole point behind these urban legends. They can be real. Now, they may be retold in different ways. And in fact, that gas station story, I made that up.
Really?
As an example. I made that completely up. Most of I actually kind of made it up right here at the microphone.
Oh, I can tell.
And really, just to show the fact that, you know, you can take an urban legend and spin it and make it your own. And that's how these urban legends keep building and building and building to something bigger and bigger. Now, it is a true story. The true story is the Green Man, or what was I? Charlie No Face. Gosh, I went blank for a second. Charlie No Face. The real story is he was a man. His name was Raymond Robinson. Okay? Raymond Robinson. He was born October 29th, 1910, almost on Halloween. So in 1910. Oh, yeah. This is where it gets confusing. I read a lot of reports on this guy. One report said this incident happened in 1919 that I'm about to tell you at the age of 9, and others say it happened in 1917 at the age of 7. So I'm not quite sure if this happened to him at the age 7 or 9. It's weird how I was getting conflicting reports. So Raymond, as a, let's just say 9-year-old, because I think the majority of the reports I read said 1919. Raymond, at the age of 9, being a curious little boy, climbed up onto one of those trolley lines, you know, where it's basically a elevated railroad track with the trolley cars. The trolley cars, they have the things at the top that connect to the power cables, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So he climbs up on the trolley line, and he's looking around, and he sees a bird's nest up high on the lines. Okay, so he climbs up the little, I guess, the little tower thing he wants to inspect the bird's nest. I guess he was hungry. He wanted to have some succulent little eggs or something.
Really succulent.
So as he's up there, he touches the line and gets electrocuted by 22,000 volts. 22,000 volts, mind you. Okay?
Wow.
That's a lot, you know, but I guess it could have been worse. It could have been, you know, 1.21 gigawatts, you know, like Doc Brown. 1.21 gigawatts, you know what I'm talking about?
21 gigawatts!
Yeah.
Really?
Can you tell us again, Doc, what was it?
21 gigawatts!
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Doc Brown. So
okay, why don't you get back in your DeLorean?
Get back in your DeLorean.
Why don't you come get me, and we'll leave in the DeLorean.
Oh, whatever. So, yeah, so he gets shocked by 1.21... No, wait. He gets shocked by 22,000 volts. He is severely disfigured.
Aww.
Loses both eyes, his nose, and left arm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I have a picture of him right here. I'm going to pull it up for you, Colleen, since...
Oh, is it scary?
You tell me.
That's
him.
Horrible.
I'm going to put this up on... okay, if you're getting this through Podbean, you're not going to see this, or from one of our other, you know, accounts. But if you go to JediCole.com and go to this posting where this podcast is at, I'll post this picture of Charlie No Face, the real Charlie No Face.
Is he alive there?
He is alive. That's him.
My gosh.
That's him back in the day. That's him older.
Oh my gosh!
Literally, all that's left is a mouth and one ear.
He doesn't even look like he has a mouth. I mean,
I know.
Well, it should be. It's really not.
Yeah, if you don't go to JediCole.com, just go to Google and search Charlie No Face. It's going to come up right away. So those two images, Colleen, that I'm showing you right now, those are the two main ones that you'll find in a search.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
So that happened to him at 7 or 9 years old?
Yeah, let's just say 9. I think the majority of the reports said 9. I don't know why I kept getting conflicting reports. Maybe someone in there out there can write us on Facebook and tell us if they know for sure. Which,
or maybe it's made up, so.
No.
You know, every time you say Charlie No Face, I think of, isn't there a character in the original Star Trek episode, Charlie X?
Charlie X.
Okay, so I just have that flashing in my mind every time.
So he loses both eyes, nose, and left arm. Okay, this is where they get the green man. You know, the whole legend that there was a green glowing man. His skin was so badly burned, it would get infected.
Oh.
When the infection would set in, it gave his skin a greenish hue that gave off the appearance that it was glowing. So can you believe that? The infection gave off this greenish hue. And so that's where the part comes from. He was the green man that glows. So if you can imagine that, okay?
So this wasn't supposed to be after he died, his spirit. This was just supposed to be him.
That's the different things. Like with the, okay, let me, I'll get into that in just a minute. But there's more to, did I talk about, I don't know if I talked about this. Did I talk about the Green Man's tunnel? Yeah, I did, yeah. Because the people would make out, and there's more to the tunnel story that I'll tell in just a bit. Okay, so he's severely disfigured. So he grows up living with his parents, and he made a living making, like, leather goods, like wallets and belts and stuff like that. Leather goods and other household items, like hand towels and rugs and welcome mats and stuff like that. So think
how?
About that.
We
he's got
see.
He's got one. Well, and he's got one arm.
Right.
So, yeah, he's doing this, you know, with these severe handicaps. He's still making an honest living.
That says a lot about him, honestly.
Yeah. So, this took place in I don't know if it's Coppell or Coppel. It's Koppel. It's a borough in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That legend is the Green Man of Pittsburgh. And that's why, because that's where he was. He lived in a borough. So, all this literally stems from his story. Like, it was nearly true. Now, the part that they say that they would see this green spectral man walking on the side of the road at night, you know, this, and it was always Charlie No Face. Like, it was always, like, the figure, whether it was a specter or not, or the boogeyman or whatever, it was always a man with no face.
Yeah.
That part comes because when he did his walking around, it was always at nighttime, because he realized very early on that when he was going out during the day, he was scaring people. He was getting stared at. People were talking about him. So he felt more comfortable going out at nighttime. So he would be out and about at night, I imagine, with, you know, with a cane and all, like any normal. I mean, to a blind person, not to be funny, to a blind person, it's always nighttime, really. So I guess it wouldn't matter to him that he wasn't going in the day. But he would go out at night to do his things. And that's where that part of the legend comes, you know, because he would be walking along the side of the road. There's even reports that he actually was hit a couple of times, obviously not severely, but he was actually struck by a car because he would walk at night right along the side of the road. They said he was just a really good guy. Like, people would...
Aww.
I mean, for lack of a better term, he had fans, because people just knew who he was. And people wanted to have their picture taken with him. So he would always agree to have his picture taken with people in exchange for a beer or a smoke and a chit-chat.
No.
So he was willing to take the picture, but all he has to return is you share a beer or a cigarette with him, and you just kind of shoot the breeze for
spend
a while.
Spend time with him.
Yeah. Okay, so this tunnel, that one, they say in the legend that you could drive your car through and come out the other side with handprints and fingerprints on it. Not true. It wasn't even along the highway, like the legends say.
Huh.
What there is a tunnel. It's used, I don't know if it's always been this way. Maybe it was at one point you could walk through it to get through this little, like, hill, whatever. But what it's used for now is to store rock salt, I guess, for the city to come scoop out rock salt when the roads are icy.
Yeah,
it's
probably.
It's, like, nearly complete. I've seen pictures of it. It's nearly full to the brim of just rock salt. So this is the funny thing about it, though. It's located about 50 miles from where he lived. And people would ask, well, what? He obviously, he's not driving himself. He has to walk where he goes. So how did he end up 50 miles at this supposed tunnel 50 miles away?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and why would it bear his name, the Green Man? Okay, so allegedly, there's a report that some people picked him up to offer to take him to go drinking, which apparently these fans would often do. They would pick him. They said, "Hey, you know, we'll take you to go drinking. You know, tell us your story and all that." So he would drive with people, strangers, to go have a drink. Well, these people had bad intentions, and allegedly, they picked him up, drove him 50 miles away, took him to this tunnel. I guess, yeah, at the time, it would not have been filled with rock salt. And beat him up. And, you know, I guess left him there beat up. And so that's where it got the name the Green Man Tunnel. And what's weird is if you look this up on, like, any kind of apps, any kind of map apps, I know that sounds funny, it actually is marked Green Man's Tunnel on the map.
Wow.
Yeah. Another legend that stemmed from the Green Man's Tunnel is that, you know, when listening to the legend, it was said that his spirit waits in the tunnel to bring justice to bullies.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, so he's like a superhero.
I can't stand bullies.
So if he's a superhero, that means the tunnel is his bat cave.
Uh-huh.
You know what it reminds me of? I just thought of this. It reminds me of Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Like that legend because, oh, yeah. You know,
they're bullies.
They bullies. They killed Bubba and he becomes a scarecrow and comes and gets revenge on them.
That sounds so silly when you say it out loud. But anyway.
Yeah, no.
It's a really good movie. I like
it. Yeah. So yeah, Raymond Robinson, born October 29, 1910. He passed away in 1985. So he was like, 75? I think they said 75, 76 when he passed away. So he had a good long life. You know, he was always well cared for. He made a good living and ended up in a resting home, I guess, at the end of his days. But yeah, so the Green Man is actually based on a true story.
Actual true person.
Yeah, not a figment
of your imagination.
So what do you have next?
Well,
oh wait,
I don't know.
Hold on.
Okay,
is there something you wanted to say, Doc Brown?
21 gigawatts.
Can you, I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
21 gigawatts.
Okay, thank you, Doc Brown. Now you can continue.
Are you sure?
I don't know. Chelsea the Chupacabra's kind of looking at me like, what is that old geezer going on and on about?
No, I think she's looking at you because she's hungry.
I thought she was vegetarian.
My next urban legend is also one of my favorites. It's probably my second favorite, and it is the backseat slasher.
Oh, wow.
This is one of my favorite urban legends. I've always been, I guess, a little spooked out about this one. You know, I mean, I drive a small car, and if you're going to be in my back seat, it's going to take some work to get back there. So I don't really think about looking in my back seat. But, you know, whenever we're in your Trailblazer, how many times do you see me turning around looking back there at night? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or especially when we've gone out and we're getting in the truck. You know, it's,
oh, I do too. Like just, when I have my back seat down and if it's up, before I get in, I go around and I'll look in the windows, make sure no one's in the trunk area. I do it all the time.
Yeah. So I think it's more common than people think. It's not just something in the movies. Anyway, so this story, lots of versions of it. You know, there's one I have it on CD. Uncle Rattler. You love Uncle Rattler, don't you?
Yeah, I guess.
Nah. He tells a story of a young woman is driving home from school, I guess, after a game. Mm-hmm. And the man, or the person in the truck behind her, keeps flashing his high beams at her, his brights.
Mm-hmm.
And so she speeds up, he speeds up. She slows down, he slows down. She makes a turn, he makes a turn. He's following her everywhere.
It's and like Simon Says without the Simon Says.
Every so often, he flashes his brights at her, and she cannot figure out what is going on. You know, she's on this road by herself, nothing around. She's just trying to get home. So she gets home, and she jumps out of the car, and she's, you know, yelling at her parents, call the police. And the guy in the truck behind her pulls up, gets out, and he's like, I'm not the one you need to call the police about. There's somebody in your back seat. Man, that just gave me the chills saying that right then.
Yeah.
So apparently there was someone in her back seat, and he would raise up and lift his knife trying to get her. And every time he did that, the guy in the truck would flash his brights. And when he did, the slasher would lay back down. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's another version in the actual movie, Urban Legend, where kind of the same thing. Well, I guess different. The girl is driving this SUV, and it's at nighttime, of course. And she gets to a gas station, and the gas attendant is you know, he's starting to freak out, and he's who is he? Wormer from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that guy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Halloween.
Yeah, he's
Rob Zombie's Halloween. He plays the sheriff.
Yeah, that guy. So he's creepy looking anyway.
Yeah.
And he's kind of freaking out, and he's wanting her to come inside, and so she comes inside, and he's got this really bad stutter, so he's trying to tell her, and when he's doing that, she's getting freaked out because she doesn't understand what he's doing. You know, it's nighttime, she's there by herself, and so she leaves, and she runs to the truck, gets back in, and drives off, and then as she's driving off, he's yelling, "There's somebody in the back! See!" You know, and there's nothing he could do now. So that whole time, he was trying to tell her, and again, I got chills. And I guess there's been several different, you know, was it a man in driving? Was it a woman?
Yeah.
Was it a little car? Was it an SUV? You know, different places, too.
What is
too.
A horse and carriage? Was it a moped? Was it a skateboard?
I think it was a purse, actually. And I think it was my fist slapping your mouth. Okay? Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. So, now we need Chelsea, because we're going to find out, is this story true, or is it just a figment?
Okay, well, Chelsea, why don't you give us the drum roll, please? Okay.
All right. This story has had true instances. Now, I'm not sure if they happened after the urban legend came out. My guess is they did. There was an instance where this lady got in her car, and she realized someone was in her back seat. And all she remembers is she was driving, and he sat up and wrapped his arms around her trying to get her, and she was able to slam on her brakes and get out and all this kind of stuff. So she lived to tell the tale. So he was actually hiding in her car, but again, I don't know if that happened after the urban legend came out, or if the urban legend is based on her. She didn't look that old, so yeah. I doubt it. But anyway, I've always been fascinated with that, and I you know, it's just one of those things where it's nighttime and it's dark, and especially when you're alone, you better look in that back seat.
So that one's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, because I think that person in the back seat legend has always been a very creepy one for a lot of people.
Before you get started, let me just say that we are here in our house, obviously. We have all the lights off and we have the candles lit, and it's finally starting to get dark outside. So this is really cool.
Yeah, it's
and
really dark in here.
I forgot one thing about my very first legend that I talked about, the Halloween candy one.
Candyman.
Yeah, he was nicknamed Candyman and the man who ruined Halloween and all that. That happened in Texas.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
And for you listeners who don't know, we are in Texas.
Yes, we are.
Home of the Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
So, my next one is a Bloody Mary. Now, I'm sure everybody knows the legend of Bloody Mary. You and your friends go into the bathroom, you say her name three times, and she appears in the mirror. And at that point, she either scratches out your eyes, chokes you, or gives you a big, wet, sloppy kiss. It just depends who you're hearing the legend from.
Maybe she fixes your hair, like if you're, you know, you need help.
Or like, in your case, your lip gloss to tell you if it's on right.
I was going
to
say that. Oh, no. My lip gloss is always on right.
Oh, gosh.
Thank
don't
you.
Gag.
Even when I'm
gag.
Not looking in the mirror.
Hashtag gag. So
hashtag humble brag.
So Bloody Mary. So yeah, so we all know the story, and I just went through it very quickly. That's been one that's been told since we were teeny tiny kids. I remember being in elementary. Let me think for a second. It was like fifth grade, maybe sixth grade. So we were older elementary kids. You know, we were all, you know, in the restroom, like me and like maybe four other boys, and I remember one of them said, "Let's do Bloody Mary," and they're like, the rest of the kids are like, "Yeah!" And
uh-huh.
So I'm like, "No!" I was like washing my hands. I was like, "I don't even think I dried my hands. I think I just like y'all have at it. I'm out of here." And so mm-hmm. I left. I no more got out of the bathroom and was just barely up the hallway heading back to the classroom. And I hear all of them. Of course, they had shut the lights off as I'm leaving. You know, because that's part of it. You have to have the lights off, looking in the mirror, and all that stuff. They shut the lights off, and so I'm up the hallway just barely. I hear all of them just start screaming and running out and just like screaming and laughing. So obviously they tried it. One of them probably screamed. It got everybody else worked up. And as we ran away, they realized, oh, he's just messing with us. So I don't know of anybody that it's ever worked on. Anybody. Do you, Colleen?
Absolutely not. And can I just say that I'm an adult most of the time, and I have never done that. I have never even said it one time in front of the mirror. And I won't.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so...
Oh, and let me say that I've never been with friends that have done it either. Like you, I don't remember any of my friends even, like... I mean, we talked about it, but none of them got serious. I think they were all just as scared as I was. And it's not just being scared, but it's like, you don't want to play, at least me, I didn't want to play around with that.
Yeah,
and so, if I ever encountered that situation, I would have left too.
Yeah. Okay, so Chelsea, if you would, give us a drum roll, please. All right. It's a figment.
Oh, it's a figment
of your imagination.
Of your imagination.
Oh wait, she's motioning. I think she wants to play another drum roll. Okay, go for it.
1.21 gigawatts.
Okay, no, she just wanted to 1.21 gigawatts again. Okay, thank you for that.
Oh, please no. She's snarling at you, by the way.
She did it! So anyway, so it's a figment, but this is where it all stems from. Bloody Mary is obviously in reference to Queen Mary the First. That's where the legend really, they assume that's where it stems from, is Queen Mary the First. What it is sometimes, as the legend's being told, she's sometimes holding a dead baby in her arms.
Oh.
And the reason why is because apparently she was known to have had several miscarriages.
Aww.
And that's where that part of it comes from. Bloody Mary also, because apparently she wasn't just overall just not a nice person. I guess she was the reason for a lot of people dying or something. So that would explain the bloody part. And so it's completely made up. It's completely a figment based on a real person, but still nonetheless it's fake. Now, this is where people who have claimed that they have seen something, this is where it stems from. And Colleen, you were saying earlier that you've never done that. You've never even said the name even once in front of a mirror.
No.
That is called I knew I was going to mess this up. Captoptromancy. Or captromancy. That's a little easier to say. Captromancy. Or anoptromancy. Crap.
What the heck are you saying?
Yeah, so you can look it up. It's divination using a mirror, okay?
It's the fear of maybe dying?
No, it's using a mirror to call forth spirits.
Oh.
So it's an actual act. Now, when people say that they have seen a face in the mirror, what that's stemming from is from the Caputo effect. The Caputo effect occurs when they're as a result of sensory deprivation, okay? Now, Giovanni Caputo said this about the phenomenon. He's the one who coined it. He says he calls it the strange face illusion, dissociative identity effect, which causes the brain's facial recognition system to misfire in an as yet unidentified way. What this all means is, okay, so you're in the dark looking in the mirror. You can kind of see your reflection. When our brain is deprived of light, then it tries to overcompensate. And a lot of times that leads to these visual misfires, if you will, a phenomenon that we, of course, don't fully comprehend. So it causes a distortion of our own face. You know, when you look at your reflection in the mirror.
Not mine. Mine always looks beautiful.
Of course. But other people. Normal people.
Oh.
So, it causes a distortion because your brain is basically trying to fill in the blanks where there is no visual information. Okay? Couple that with the fact that someone who's performing this ritual with the hopes of seeing something to call forth Bloody Mary or somebody else. Why don't you add in that factor? So when you go into a situation expecting to see something, then the brain then tries to make sense of it and sees it, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's like the people who, when you go out looking for Bigfoot, if you're out there just anxious to find Bigfoot, any little shadow, any little movement, anything you hear, automatically you're going to attribute it to Bigfoot.
I wonder if it has something to do with when the lights are off, your pupils start getting huge, and you can feel them expanding. So do you think it had, I wonder if it has anything to do with that. Like your pupils, your eyes are trying to adjust to the dark?
That's a good point. Now, I know there is another factor that, that plays into it. They said that there's, again, I just remember reading this. I don't have any of this in front of me. It's some sort of thing where they say that when you stare into a person's eyes for 10 minutes, you enter a form of altered reality. Like it messes with your head to that effect. So anyway, Bloody Mary, fake.
What if you stare into like yourself? If you're looking at yourself, your own eyes, does it work?
No. So anyway, and also another part of the legend is young women, they would walk up a flight of stairs backwards in the dark, holding a candle and a hand mirror. And as they looked into the mirror, they were supposedly able to either catch a view of their future husband, or they would see a skull or the face of the Grim Reaper. And if that happened, that means that they were going to die before they were ever going to have a chance to get married.
Or maybe they were going to die before they completed the stairs, because who in the right mind is going to walk upstairs backwards?
Well, they're not walking downstairs backwards.
Well, walking upstairs backwards is just as bad.
I suppose it could be.
Especially a long time ago, those long dresses they'd wear.
Yeah. So that's Bloody Mary, fake. So, time for your next one, Colleen.
My last urban legend is also one of my most favorites. This has always scared me. Not that I go out, you know, like in the woods or down a scary road a lot, but it's just one that I kind of think of sometimes when I'm out in the country, or maybe when we're hiking or camping. And it is none other than the Hook Man.
Oh gosh,
I love this one. Okay, legend has it that a young couple gets in the boyfriend's car and they go out to, you know, Lover's Lane, wherever that is. Out on, you know, in a pasture somewhere. It's always out at night, in the woods, in the country, somewhere
in
where...
In a desolate area.
Desolate area. Yeah. There's nothing around, no lights, nothing. Okay, boyfriend wants to make out, of course. They're out there. Things are happening, not really happening. And girlfriend hears something, and she tells him to stop. And, oh, it's just your imagination. They kiss a little bit more, and she hears something else. And it's, like, closer now and louder. And he's, again, it's just your imagination. And she's like, okay, no, I want to go. You need to take me home now. And I'm thinking, who wouldn't want to go home? Oh, my gosh. That seems scary. I mean, don't you think if you put yourself in that situation, wouldn't you be scared?
Well, yeah. I mean, because the mind starts playing tricks on you.
Yeah, and you, I mean, you look out and you see things. And, I mean, come on, no telling what is out there. Really? They speed off, and of course he's upset and she's still freaking out, and he gets out and goes around to open her door, and there is a hook attached to the car door. So of course that is the noise that she was hearing. That's how close the hook man got to them, was the hook and the handle of the door.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that after that, after she's inside and she's listening to the radio, the news comes on saying that this escaped convict has, you know, he's on the loose, and watch out, you'll know who he is because he's got a hook for a hand.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And really, that's the only version I've ever heard. I don't remember it sounding any different.
Yeah, I mean,
do you?
The ones I've heard are basically the same thing.
Yeah.
That's one of the legends that doesn't really change much.
Right.
Other than, like, the minor details, like, you'd hear it told is, like, you know, the teenagers just, they're at a Bobby Sock dance, and they left early if it was back in the 50s, or they were, you know, at a rock concert if it was something a little bit more modern, or the drive-in theater if it was like in the 70s. You know,
right.
it just depends on the era. The little details change, but overall the story stays
the
same.
Yeah, the little details. Or maybe where they were. Were they on Lover's Lane? And yeah. Anyway, so now we need Chelsea.
Okay.
Chelsea, are you here? Okay, Chelsea, please stop snarling at Eddie. Yes, I know you want to bite him because he gets on your nerves too.
I'm not doing anything to you, Chelsea.
But
we
need
you
to play the drums.
Back off, you little chupacabra pain in the butt.
Okay, so the story of the Hook Man true, or is it a figment?
Let's see. Chelsea, if you will.
1.21 gigawatts!
No, not 1.21 gigawatts. We need the drum roll.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, okay, drum roll, please.
All right, this story is fake.
Fake.
There has never been an instance where someone has reported that happening. I don't believe that there's ever even been an instance where someone has reported being out somewhere like that and they saw someone with a hook or heard, you know, I mean, it just,
yeah,
it's just fake. They think that what it might stem from is the Phantom murders. And if you're not familiar with that, if you've seen the movie The Town That Dreaded Sundown,
oh yeah, yeah,
it was based on the true happenings of the Phantom murders in, where? Texarkana. And
home of the Boggy Creek Monster.
Okay. No hooks or anything like that, but people would be out in their cars. You know, Lover's Lane keeps coming up, and the Phantom Killer would come and just terrorize them. And so they think that that's where the story kind of got started from.
Okay, and if I may, I've always heard it as being fake because it was parents' way of telling a cautionary tale of premarital sex.
Right.
Like, that was their way of
scaring the kids not to...
Yeah, scaring them straight. And so that's where I've always heard it stem from. It also kind of reminds me of the Zodiac Killer a little bit, but I know that's not where it stems from. But it makes me think of that case.
Because the Zodiac Killer did kill people that were in their cars, I believe, parked out.
Yeah,
kind of
having
like
a picnic
same,
or and all that.
Yeah, yeah, same situation.
My next one is the Blackwater Mystery. And that's one I named myself because I didn't really see on this urban legend where it had a name other than they just kept referring to it as Blackwater. Legend tells that a family moves into a new home, and not soon after that they move in, they discover that all the water coming out of the taps and shower and all that is black in color and smells rancid.
Ew.
So they call in a plumber. You know, he comes out, he checks the pipes, can't find any breaks in any of the lines, and so can't find the reason behind this. It'll clear itself up, I imagine, that's what he said. So it continues. Like, the family keeps saying, like, this water, we can't even use this water. They're having to get water from, like, neighbors and stuff like that. It's getting ridiculous. It continues. So a friend of the family suggests that it may be paranormal in nature. Like, something, evil spirit is, like, messing with them, messing with their water. You know, there's been tales of ghosts turning, making blood come out of faucets and stuff. So now they're fearing that their house is haunted. They have paranormal experts come in to investigate. Still nothing. They
can't.
Could
it just be old pipes?
They can't figure. Well, no, the plumber would have. He checked the pipes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Still nothing. So they're ruling out paranormal activity. So it's still happening. So they call in another plumber thinking, okay, let's just get a second opinion. So let's have this other guy come out and see what he can figure out. He comes out and does a better job than the other one did. He goes into the water tank that's on their land and finds a rotting corpse in the water tank. A human corpse rotting away. That's what was causing the blackening of the water.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Chelsea, can we get you to... No gigawatts. Go for the drum. Yes, very good. Get up on that drum. Okay, very good. So, it's real.
Oh no.
It's real, but it didn't take place in a house family, but it's worse.
Ew.
It took place in a hotel, affecting many people over the course of 19 days. So here's the story. The Hotel Cecil in Los Angeles, California. It's 2013, February. So for 19 days, the guests there start complaining of unusual water pressure in their showers and faucets. Others, you know, depending on what floors they're on or whatever, complain of discolored water that smells funny. Others are even complaining that the water is just black. And so upon investigating, authorities start digging around trying to figure out where it's stemming from. They find the body of Canadian student Elisa Lamb in the water tower on top of the roof of the hotel. So for 19 whole days, the guests, employees at the hotel, they're drinking water, they're showering in this water, the guests are brushing their teeth with this tainted water that is tainted by the rotting corpse of Alyssa Lamb in the water tower on the roof. Now, it gets stranger. Alyssa Lamb's death in itself is a mystery, okay? She was staying at the hotel. She checked in on February 1st, 2013. So for 19 days, she goes missing. Now, they do have closed caption footage. You know, the camera was there in the elevator. They have footage of her entering the elevator. Now, this just gets strange. And you can look this up on YouTube. Just type in her name, E-L-I-S-A-L-A-M.
This sounded familiar.
Yeah. She gets into the elevator and starts to, what appears to be cowering in the front corner of the elevator as if she's hiding from someone or something. So she's cowering and she's starts to like appear to panic and erratically starts pressing the buttons to get the elevator to shut and go. But it's not shutting. Then, to make it even stranger, she steps out of the elevator and starts moving her hands about as if she's, I don't know, maybe arguing or pleading with someone. You don't see anyone else in the footage. You can see part of the hallway, you know, not much, but you can see part of it. There's no one there. She's looking at, like, no one. And she's moving, you can see her hands moving, you can tell she's doing something, saying something. No one's there. As she's doing all that, the door closes, and we never see her alive again.
Crazy.
Yeah. So then, February 19th rolls around. Her body's discovered in the water tank of the roof. She's completely naked with her clothes and belongings floating close by in the tank with her. The cause of death was ruled accidental drowning because there are no signs of trauma on her body. So it's not like someone, you know, beat her up and dragged her up there and put her in this. It gets stranger.
Stranger than that?
Yeah. Mind you, the tanks are on the roof. They're only accessible by two ways. One is by the fire escape. The other is by locked doors that only the hotel staff have keys and the passcodes to. So unless you have those keys and passcodes, you're not going to get through those doors. The doors are set to trigger an alarm. So if anyone other than a key holder or passcode user accesses them, an alarm goes off. So somehow she got up on the roof without setting off the alarm. She gets inside this water tank. Now, let me tell you about this tank. It's 8 foot tall with no, like, attainable access to the top of it. There's no, like, built-in little ladder on the side. It's literally a 8 foot tank, slick on the side, so you can't just shimmy up it. Authorities actually had to bring in a ladder to get up on top of the tank. So how she got up there, we don't know. Assuming she got up there with a ladder, the ladder would have still been there, or she would have kicked it over, it would have been there. No ladder. She gets up there somehow. The lid on the top is so heavy, they say it is unlikely that she would have been able to open it and hold it up herself in order to get into the tank. It is that heavy. It was so tightly sealed, this door on top, that the police actually had to drill through it in order to get her out.
There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no... How did she get up there? How did she get it open?
That's what everybody's saying. Exactly. That's what makes her death even more bizarre than the urban legend itself. Apparently, she suffered from bipolar disorder. So she was bipolar. Some people say that would be why she was acting erratically in the elevator. Oh. Now, assuming that's the case, and she just was suffering from an episode and went up on the roof, somehow got up there, somehow got up onto the tank, somehow got that thing open to where she got in, and then she drowned herself. But not before she stripped and, you know, had her belongings, all that, in there in the tank with her. So there's a lot of impossibilities that she was able to make possible in order for that to happen.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
She gave us one heck of an urban legend.
Hold on. There's more.
Oh, my.
They said that there's a bizarre similarities to the 2005 movie Dark Water. I think it stars Jennifer Connelly or something. So Dark Water is about a girl who is found murdered in a water tank, and they only find her body because the tenants in the building start complaining that the water is black and smelly and all that. The movie preceded this incident by 8 whole years, but yet it plays out the same. Isn't it weird? Yeah. There's more.
No, not more. I can't handle it.
Shortly before her death, Alyssa tweeted an article about a Canadian company who had gained funding from the Pentagon, and remember, she's Canadian, to work on cloaking devices that would be used by military to make their soldiers invisible. Did she know something that she shouldn't have and was killed because of it? Is it the cloaking technology, is that the reason why it appears that she's talking to herself in the hallway?
Yeah.
With someone in a cloaking suit in the hallway, we can't see them on that camera, but she could, and that's who she was, you know, in such distress because of that. So lots and lots and lots of questions. So,
and maybe something else was cloaked that we couldn't see that got her in the water.
Well, that would be the case if someone actually saw her getting up there herself, but we don't even know. Yeah, we have no clues if she was even up there by herself. There's no eyewitnesses to even that. I mean, in likelihood, she could not have done that by herself.
No.
In all likelihood, somebody or people took a ladder, took her up there, got her up on that. One or more people pried that thing open, put her in, closed it, left with the ladder. That's how you explain that. But who? That's the question. Who did this to her?
I forgot it was, what, 19 days later?
Yeah.
I forgot it was that long. I was thinking that they might have been cloaking whatever they used to get her in the water tower. That way, when authorities came, they didn't see anything around. But I forgot it was so long.
Yeah, it would already been 19 days
that
passed.
They would have already gone.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have been hanging around.
So we have, in total, the Blackwater Mystery, true, Bloody Mary, figment, and the Green Man, true. So I have two real and one figment. What do you have?
I have Candyman, partly true.
Well, you gotta choose one or the other. It is true.
Okay, true, but not really. And then Hookman, figment.
Figment, okay.
And then the killer in the back seat, that's true.
Okay, so we have four real, two that are figments. That is crazy.
Uh-huh. That is pretty crazy.
So we definitely are going to have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, there are so many more urban legends out there. And as we're talking, I really am paying attention. But as we're talking, I'm thinking about others that I want to talk about.
I know. But anyway, this has been week two of our month-long spooky cases for the month of Halloween. We'll be back next week with another spooky case. And we're not going to tell you what it is. We know what it is, but we're not going to tell y'all.
Oh.
You're going to have to wait and tune in later.
Yeah, you have to wait.
So as you're there at home, unwrapping your candy with the razor blades inside, and sitting next to a glowing green man, and possibly looking over at the mirror, chanting Bloody Mary, you need to ask yourself, are they real, or are they figments? Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
21 gigawatts!
Figments is a production of EdMed Art Studios and hosted by the Jedi Cole Universe. You can find us at www.jedicole.com and www.eddiemedina.com. Thank you for listening, and keep searching for the unknown.